Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and not alongside me outside of the studio today is our good friend, Bob Finkbeiner, the Red Snapper.
How you doing?
And of course, our technical wizard is our producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So we're trying this out of the studio today. We're gonna see how this goes. But the Los Angeles Angels, I don't know if you guys have heard this, they have a little pool going on whether or not Josh Hamilton's going to be booed when he returns to Texas. Thoughts?
My money's on yes.
I tend to say he'll be receiving a lot of applause, I think.
I think it's going to be a good mixture. He's going to get a lot of people that boo him, but he's going to get a lot of cheers too, because I feel like the good fans there will appreciate what he did.
I think a mixture, yes, but there's many a fickle fan out there, and they'll just focus on the fact that he's gone and forget about all the things he did for them. So
he certainly didn't endear himself to the fans there when he called them all awful fans, too. So those awful fans there probably didn't appreciate that either.
No.
Yeah, that's true. His postseason.
Go ahead.
His postseason stats didn't really, or performance didn't really help him out.
No, yeah, he didn't remember all that when he steps up to the plate for the first time.
Yeah. Well, on today's show, we're going to go over what's going on in everybody's camps. We're going to have a little Sunday soapbox, and then we're going to wrap up the show. Should be a rather quick one today. So let's start it off with Jason and what's going on in Cleveland.
All right, well, in Cleveland camp this week, the big news was who's not going to make the roster. There weren't a whole lot of people announced as to who will make the roster, but they started narrowing the list down, telling Matt Capps and Dice K that they won't be on the opening day roster. Then on Thursday, telling Trevor Bauer, Corey Kluber, and Scott Barnes that they won't be on the roster. So the fifth starter's job, technically, is down to Scott Kazmir and Carlos Carrasco. It's basically Kazmir's job. Really, the only question is, are they going to pursue this, I don't think there's any other word for it other than scheme that they've come up with to circumvent Carrasco's suspension by keeping him on the roster for the first either week or two of the season so he can serve his suspension when they don't really need him. But it really looks like the job is Kazmir's to lose. Carrasco pitched yesterday. If you look at his stat line, it's not too exciting, giving up 4 runs in 5 innings, but to anyone listening that didn't see the game, he gave up 3 of those runs immediately following Michael Brantley losing a can of corn in the Arizona sun. So, I guess that's one of those things that just happens, and a better pitcher you hope would pitch around it, but he probably really only should have been charged with 1 run in that game. But so we'll see how that plays out. As far as the guys they sent down, Dice K accepted the assignment to the minor leagues and said that was fine, and he'd try to work his way back up and give the Indians some depth. Matt Capps was not happy at all and has said basically that he hasn't decided if he's going to accept the assignment. And if he's offered a major league job, then he's going to take it. So we'll see how that plays out.
Now, is there a timetable for Caps having to decide whether or not he wants to take the assignment?
Yeah. Any player with 6 years of experience in camp, 6 years of MLB experience who's signed on a minor league deal, the team has to offer them $100,000. They're calling it a retention bonus. On March 26th. And if they accept that bonus, then they can be sent to the minors and kept there till June without any consent or anything. So if he accepts that bonus on March 26th, then he's made his decision. So we're going to know in the next couple of days, if not before, what's going to happen with Caps. Caps is one of those guys, if you look at his numbers, you think, oh, you know, he's doing okay. But when you watch him pitch, it's not there. He's not right. He hasn't fully recovered from his injuries. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets an offer. I kind of don't think that he will, but we'll see what happens. They put Barnes back down to Columbus, which essentially means that Nick Hagedone is going to be the second lefty out of the bullpen to go along with Rich Hill. Barnes and Hagedone both pitched well this spring. I would say, though, that Hagedone has pitched better and probably has a higher ceiling as a reliever than Barnes. So yeah. I think that makes sense. Personally, I would really like to see them try to stretch Scott Barnes back out to a starter in the minor leagues. That's what he originally came up as. And really the only reason they converted him to a reliever last year is he was coming back from an ACL injury and they had a need in the bullpen. I don't know that they'll do that, though, because they probably don't have a whole lot of confidence in Rich Hill or Nick Hagedone, since he imploded in a week last year and ended up busting his hand in the dugout. So they probably won't feel like Barnes needs to stay a reliever to provide that depth for them. The last guy I'd want to talk about is Cord Phelps, who is a guy that Jason Kipnis made Indians fans forget about. These guys were kind of neck and neck moving through the minors, with Cord Phelps maybe even a little ahead of Kipnis, but then Kipnis leapfrogged him and has, you know, shown everyone that he's a major league player. So he's taken that second base job away from Phelps. Phelps has had really a very, very good spring. Tito Francona just raves about him. He's hit 349 this spring, and that's over quite a few at-bats. I think he's had almost 40 at-bats. And, I mean, he's really, when you watch the games, just absolutely ripping the ball every time he's up to the plate. Even his outs are just absolute shots. So he's a guy that's a victim of having Rayburn and Avilas and maybe even Giambi. I know that's going to make Bob cringe, but...
Oh, man.
But I think he's their first option if Rayburn falters, which, as we know, there's a 50-50 chance probably that that will happen with Ryan Rayburn. So hopefully Cord Phelps can keep it going down at Columbus, because I think he will have a chance on this roster, whether it's to replace Jason Giambi or Ryan Rayburn. So that's pretty much the news out of Indians camp. I guess we'll see what happens with McGinnis, the Rule 5 pick, whether they keep him, work out a trade with the Rangers, because he's definitely not going to make the team. It'll be interesting to see if they keep him, where they decide to put him, since they have McDade and Laporta, theoretically, at Columbus, and Jesus Aguilar down at Akron. So we'll see what they do, if they end up keeping him or just giving him back to the Rangers.
Yeah, I have a question, Jason.
Shoot.
About Rich Hill.
Okay.
You said basically the Tribe doesn't appear to be trustworthy or favorable on Rich Hill, but is that, do you think, to his injury history? Because obviously when he came up with the Cubs, he has outstanding stuff. And when he was healthy last year for Boston, put up some pretty solid numbers too as a reliever.
Yeah, I think that's mainly due to his injury history. You know, I think they would be concerned about him being durable enough to last the entire season, as that's always been a problem for him. And I think they're also concerned about Hagedone being able to pitch at a high quality level consistently over a whole season. So I think that's why they look at Barnes as someone they need to have ready as a reliever to come up at first notice, because I would say he's their third lefty. So he's going to get the first call if one of those guys struggles.
And what's David Huff's role going to be going forward, do you think?
I tell you what, I mean, I watched David Huff pitch last week, and it was not a very pretty thing. he's given up a lot of home runs. You know, if you look at his numbers, not even – I'm not sure about this spring, frankly, off the top of my head, but I know career-wise he's actually been more effective against right-handers than left-handers.
Oh, wow.
A lot of that, I believe, is because he's developed a cutter that helps him against right-handers and doesn't really offer him a whole lot against lefties. You know, I mean, David Huff, to me, kind of falls into that Aaron Laffey, Jeremy Sowers, maelstrom of barely effective left-handers that we've been plagued with for so long on the Indians. And frankly, I'm just ready to move on. And they're not going to keep him long-term. I can't imagine how you would keep a guy like Huff over Albers or Shaw,
right.
A guy like that that's going to get one of those last spots in the bullpen. So I just don't see his long-term future with the team unless he can clear waivers.
Okay. Well, sounds like we got a lot of battles going on for a couple spots there in Cleveland. Let's head over to Detroit, Bob, and what's going on in Tigers camp?
Well, we'll give you a few updates on the injuries here with some outfielders. Andy Dierks happened to recently bruise his right knee against the outfield wall. His return is supposed to occur Saturday or Sunday this week, according to manager Jim Leland. As far as Avisel Garcia, he remains day-to-day, but he is off his crutches, so return should be hopefully in the near future, but who knows for sure. That last spot rotation is still for grabs. Drew Smalley rebounded quite well today against the Nationals, who we got lit up with last Sunday, going 5 1/3 innings pitched, allowed 4 hits, 1 earned run, and struck out 5 batters. Porcello, his counterpart in this battle, pitched very effectively in a long outing against some, I want to say, minor leaguers of the Astros organization, I think a couple days ago, I believe. According to the skipper, there remains 4 spots in the bullpen up for grabs. The only 3 that are nailed down with certainty belong to Phil Koch, Dotel, and Benoit. I would like to think that Albuquerque, Villarreal will probably nail down at least 2 of the remaining 4. And the way that Rondon's been pitching recently, I think that he would have one of the other remaining 2 spots as well. They made some moves with transactions. They sent their top prospect, Nick Castellanos, down to Toledo, or been signed there, I should say. And their top prospect, Hernan Perez, will be going to Erie, which is good news for all of us near to catch them in the Seawolves. And Tyler Collins, another outfielder, will be assigned to, I'm thinking, either Lakeland or Erie to begin the season.
Those are some guys to keep an eye on if you are a fan of the Erie Seawolves or going to be in the area. We have a couple. And did you have those guys ranked in your prospects?
Castellanos, obviously, number 1. I have Perez up there in top 20. Collins was top 10. As it stands right now, potential opening day lineup in Erie could see Daniel Fields, center field, Collins in right or left. Dixon Machado, did not rank him in top 20, but he'd be my top 30, one of my guys, at shortstop. Perez at second base. And you have a pair of catchers, one who I did rank in the top 20, James McCann, behind the plate, or the guy they acquired from the Pirates in the Andy Oliver deal, Ramon Cabrera.
Now, let me ask you this about Castellanos. Do you think that he was destined for AAA Toledo, or do you think that his play this spring was the reason why he was optioned to Toledo instead of back to Erie? Because he didn't spend a whole lot of time in Erie, and when he was there, he wasn't as successful as he was in some of the lower leagues.
I have to think that because of the play this spring, the team felt confident that he can handle a higher level of pitching and they want to challenge him by having him assigned to Toledo. So he's been raking the ball all spring long. So
that's kind of what I thought. Also, it seemed like his promotion to AAA was a product of his play this spring. I assumed at the beginning of spring training that we would be seeing him back in Erie, but I guess I wasn't also planning on him going out and just hitting the cover off the ball. And his first home run off a 95-mile-an-hour Jonathan Papelbon fastball, you know, he really did look like he seemed to belong the couple times that I watched him play.
An interesting thing is, too, like, you know, I think combined with that fact, the performance alone in the spring dictates that move a little bit. But at the same time, at the lower levels, guys like Tyler Collins are also pushing for a promotion. It makes you wonder, like, if had Nick Castellanos not performed well this spring, would he go to Erie for a little bit and then jump up to Toledo?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess you know that Detroit is aggressive with their promotions. They've never been scared to, you know, push someone along, regardless of whether it was best for their development or not.
So, especially pitching, yeah.
Yeah, so I wasn't completely shocked by it, but I was kind of expecting to get to see him in Erie for a little bit at least. So kind of disappointed, but good for him. I'm sure we'll be seeing him in Detroit in the very near future.
Yes, definitely.
Well, let's look at what's going on in Pittsburgh spring training down in Bradenton. We had some interesting moves. After Chase D'Arnaud broke his thumb, the Pirates traded for veteran infielder John McDonald. We traded cash or a player to be named later for Mr. McDonald. He'll be locking up one of our bench spots. We have both John McDonald and Mike McHenry that have been guaranteed by manager Clint Hurdle a bench spot right now. So both of those guys will be on the bench in Pittsburgh.
So I have a question about John McDonald, Andy.
Yeah.
How does that affect a guy like Josh Harrison making the Pirates roster?
Well, and that's what I was kind of wondering, too, is I was looking down the list of guys who are going to potentially make the Pirates roster. All of a sudden, that kind of made Josh Harrison look a little less appealing because he doesn't bring anything spectacular to the field. You know, with John McDonald, you're getting amazing defense. At 38 years old, he's still one of the most consistent defenders in the league. And, you know, you can run him out there and you may not be getting a stick, but at least you're getting phenomenal defense. With a guy like Josh Harrison, his kind of niche was, oh, well, you can play him anywhere and plug him in and he'll play okay. You know, he's not going to embarrass himself out there. But, you know, McDonald, you can slide him anywhere on the diamond. So I'm going to be curious to see how this affects players when you have a guy like McDonald who can go in and he can contribute immediately and he can give you something that really no one else on your bench can, which is, hey, I'm going to go play awesome defense out there.
Right.
So that'll be something to definitely keep an eye on as far as how that affects players coming off the bench. And I think, you know, late in games especially, it'll be nice to be able to stick McDonald in there. You know, if someone's wearing down or someone gets hurt or whatever we have going on with our roster. So,
A guy like that plays so much better in the National League where, you know, if you've given the day off to a guy like a Garrett Jones or something, you know, you can pinch hit Garrett Jones for the pitcher late in the game and do a double switch and enter McDonald. Or, you know, you just have so many different options in the National League when you have a strong defender like that.
Yep. Yep. And then we had a couple kind of similar to Cleveland where Pittsburgh has Brandon Inge and Brad Hopp who can opt out of their minor league deals on Tuesday the 26th. And Jonathan Sanchez has that option on Sunday, so this Sunday the 24th. And I believe I read somewhere that it was if he wasn't on the Pirates' 25-man roster, he has the opportunity to opt out, whereas with both Inge and Hopp, it was 40-man. So Sanchez threw a gem his last outing. He went out and threw 5 shutout innings. So I'll be kind of curious to see how this shakes things up, whether Pittsburgh really wants to hold on to him and try and see whether they can get some value out of him, maybe give McPherson and Locke some more time to kind of continue to develop. Although Jeff Locke has looked really good so far this spring too. So I'm kind of curious to see what Pittsburgh is going to end up doing with him. You know, there's all the typical ambiguity when people are asking about it, and so it's going to come down to, I mean, we're going to see how this shakes out pretty quickly this weekend, so it'll be interesting, something to keep an eye on. Other than that, it is just kind of like we have the fifth starter in the rotation battle going on. Kyle McPherson did himself no favors in his last outing, going out and just getting shellacked. So Jeff Locke has looked pretty good in all of his outings so far this spring, and he's throwing tomorrow against Boston at 135. So that'll be a game to keep a real close eye on to see how Locke performs coming down the stretch in spring training, battling for that fifth spot. Felix Pie, actually, they were talking to manager Clint Hurdle and said that Pie looks great so far this spring, and that the big thing with him was that he came in off of winter ball, so he's ready to play right now. And manager Clint Hurdle said that that makes a big difference as far as when you're looking at a guy like a Felix Pie versus a guy like Brad Hopp, who, you know, Hopp's trying to get his legs underneath him now in camp. So that might be something else to keep an eye on, too. And obviously, Felix Pie comes with a great defense, so that's another, again, great dynamic, especially in a park like Pittsburgh, where you have that big left center gap to kind of cover. So,
Felix Pie sighting.
Yeah. Was he with you guys last year in camp?
He was an Indians roster invite last year in camp. They kept him around for quite a while, and his defense did look good, but the stick just never came around.
Yeah.
So he also had an injury during camp last spring, too.
He did, yeah. I'll tell you what, though. I saw him in a couple of spring games, and when he gets really hustling in the outfield, man, he can fly.
He's fun to watch. Yeah, he's definitely a lot of fun to watch out there. And then the last thing I just wanted to touch on was our players that have been optioned. Brian Morris was optioned to AAA, and this was kind of odd. I guess they had to grant him a fourth option because he was out of options, and I couldn't find anything that really clarified it any more than he was granted another option. I'm not sure whether that was something he had to agree to, but he was optioned back down to AAA. And then we had Ivan DeJesus and Jared Godert. They were both optioned down to minor league camp. And DeJesus was kind of looking like a potential, maybe one of those utility bats. But he was sent down to minor league camp as well. So that's about it out of Pittsburgh. Just keep an eye on our start tomorrow from Jeff Locke throwing against Boston at 135.
It'll be interesting here as we go through this final week of spring training. This is when teams will play that kind of roster game and try to sneak some guys through waivers that might not make it through in the regular season, you know.
Yeah.
Teams kind of have their 40-mans loaded up with guys that are still in the hunt for a spot. And so, you know, teams will try to sneak a guy through like a David Huff or Zeke Carrera or someone like that with the hopes that no one will bite right now. So by this time next week, you know, we'll be real close to opening day and a lot of these questions will be answered.
Yeah, I have a feeling it'll be a completely different conversation next week when we're talking about roster spots and what the rotation is going to look like. And that's all going to be sorted out here in the next couple of days. It's coming to a head pretty quickly. So.
Yep.
Sure is.
Okay. Well, let's all get up on our soapboxes right now because we're going to have our Soapbox Sunday segment.
J.R. House. Like,
oh, boy.
Let's take all that disgust and despair and pay it off.
Just, yeah, step off. Ooh. I'm a great guy myself. Mm.
Keep talking there, Andy.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Al.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise the Jolly Roger.
Sal Fasano.
And we're going to have Bob go ahead and get on his soapbox. Bob, what do you have? What do you want to get off your chest there?
I kind of need to vent a little bit on how the Cincinnati Reds, or is it Rolls Chapman himself, or is it a combination of him, the organization, Dusty Baker, just as far as his role. They paid the guy, I want to say, what, $30 million contract over 6 years out of Cuba. I believe that to start, left-hand starter, throwing that high of gas with a nasty slider, thrown 175 plus innings a year has tremendous value. So I can understand the nursing a little bit, control worries. Okay, last year he dominates. This year, put him in rotation, and all of a sudden, he wants to close again. So you look at the roster. They now have already re-signed Jonathan Broxton, who was supposed to be closing this year before Chapman said they want to close again, for $4 million. They already have, the year before that, acquired Sean Marshall. He's getting paid $4.5 million this year, too. And on top of that, they have Nick Massett at $3.1 million. So I stick Chapman in his $4.7 million in the bullpen, too. That's a pretty expensive bullpen.
Yeah.
They better be pretty elite for that price tag.
The one thing I will say, though, with Cincinnati, as far as being a Pirates fan and getting to watch a lot of Central games every year, their games are six-inning games. I mean, you need to get your starting pitcher through six innings, and after that, they're shutting down games.
Right. And I think that makes a lot of sense when you got guys like Bronson Arroyo, who as effective as he has been at times, we get up there in age. And hopefully Homer Bailey can, you know, put the second half of last season across the full season this year. Because they could be absolutely dominant, like you said, you know, get to that first five innings, let the bullpen take over, it's lights out.
Well, and here's an interesting note. It's kind of a different direction, but just an interesting fact about the Reds. I believe Dusty Baker is the only manager in the major leagues last year who had the luxury of sending out six starters for the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
It was either five or six, but I feel like that I feel like one of them was on an innings limit, and so he swapped the one out. But the point being, the chances of that happening again
right.
are so remote. And then you take a guy with such an explosive arm like Chapman, who could help you and give you some kind of depth in your rotation, and you put him in the bullpen. As Bob says, you've already signed a closer.
Yeah, they really had two closers, actually, because they signed Marshall to close
originally.
It didn't work out as well, and he got hurt.
Right.
And then we signed Broxton, who they traded for last year, and now you had Chapman back there. I don't know. It really makes me mad when a guy like Chapman is much more valuable over 150 innings plus than 65.
Well, as far as value goes, too, and I like to use the WAR statistic just as a comparative stat because it does kind of quantify a lot of things that you observe. Aroldis Chapman had a phenomenal year last year, probably one of the best relief pitcher years that I can remember watching. He threw 71 and two-thirds innings. He had a whip that was under one. His ERA was 1.5. You know, he struck out 122 batters over those 71 frames. His WAR, his win above replacement, was 3.6, which is phenomenal for a relief pitcher. Like, I was trying to scour back to find a player that had a relief pitcher that had a better WAR, and in the couple minutes that I was looking, I couldn't find one. If you compare that to a guy like Jonathan Broxton, Jonathan Broxton's WAR last year in 2012, he had, between Kansas City and Cincinnati, a 0.3 WAR. Now, imagine that, and I know this is an extreme example. I guess that's kind of why I want to use it, because you can kind of see how much more valuable someone is. If you get a guy like Justin Verlander, which, you know, Verlander is one of the most consistent pitchers out there. He's going to throw you 200 innings. He's going to strike out a ton of batters for you, put up great ERA, great whip. Verlander's win above replacement last year was 7.6. So a starting pitcher that can throw 200 innings and put up, you know, a phenomenal ERA and phenomenal strikeouts and a phenomenal whip is going to be worth twice as much as a relief pitcher is. So I think it really does kind of demonstrate this. This is why teams want to stretch out those relief pitchers and try and get them in that starting role. Because even if you can throw 150 innings of a sub-3 ERA, that's going to be more valuable than throwing 70 innings of lights-out stuff.
Yeah, and it bugs me too, because last year they had Chapman, you know, being stretched out to begin 2012 season in rotation. And then the injuries basically forced it on the organization to move him back into the bullpen.
Yeah.
And this year, he starts out in rotation, and now he's saying that I want to be back in the bullpen again. I just don't like it at all.
The whole thing is Jonathan Papelbon all over again with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Oh, right. We're going to put him in the rotation. No, we're going to put him in the bullpen. Oh, he had, you know, a great year in the bullpen. Well, he wants to pitch out of the rotation, so we're going to give him that chance again. Oh, no, never mind. We're going to put him back in the bullpen. I mean, that's just – it's ridiculous, you know. And the thing is, from my bias coming into it, since Dusty Baker is involved, I'm not surprised in the least bit.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
You know, what he's done with some of those young guys on that team, you know, I mean, Devin Mesoraco is one that comes to mind, but the list is so long, I can't even recite it from memory. You know, he's one of those kind of old school managers who has his way of thinking, and it's just a matter of you coming around to his way of thinking than anything else. So,
and that's neat too, Jason, because you mentioned old school thinking. I mean, he got a lot of criticism before how he handled Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor on their pitch counts.
Oh, poor Mark Pryor.
So, I'm wondering, you know, if this might be a better move for Homer Bailey and Latos, because now that the bullpen's so strong, Baker can go ahead and go to the bullpen and not fear about these high pitch counts anymore.
Yeah, now all you have to worry about is if you're one of those bullpen arms having a high pitch count and innings through the roof.
But yeah, starting, I mean, you know, 3 or 4 days in a row.
Yeah, when you're a bullpen guy and you've got, you know, 80 appearances year after year after year, the Scott Shields treatment.
Yeah, it'll wear you out, absolutely. All right, well, let's come down off our soapboxes. I'm glad you got that off your chest, Bob. I didn't want you being cranky about that all week.
Thank you. I do appreciate that.
Oh, hey, anything for you, my friend. Well, that's going to wrap it up today. We'd like to thank our listeners. Thanks for tuning in. If you're listening to us on iTunes, we would kindly ask for a review on iTunes. Those reviews help drive up our popularity and get more people to listen to us, and we would love to have some more audience members. You can visit us on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TSM Baseball. So, for Bob and Jason, this is Andy Burdick. Hope you enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.